Allison decides it's going to be about. And as is typical, Chris and I generally ignore the topic, dance around it, try not to answer direct questions, and then frantically finish with questions. We just say Thursday around these parts. We're glad you're with us. You can find us on the internet, binaryjazz.us. On the Twitter, you know, our Twitter links are at the website, because I don't know what they are. Allison, Chris, and I'm Gary. Happy to have you.
It was so succinct. I don't have anything to add.
Usually I forget the website and I get distracted, but I'm focused today. Maybe.
It's your lucky piece of driftwood. That's why.
Oh, there's this little, see that little weird ceramic baby over there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point to it. I was just on a call the other day and someone was like, what's with the fat fish baby?
You should construct some sort of tale about.
Can we see the baby closer up? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a gift from a friend in China.
But is it a?
Okay.
It's a baby okay. Holding a toy.
It's like a Buddha baby.
Yeah.
It's much less weird than it possibly looked from a distance.
Yeah, from a distance, it definitely looked creepier to me.
Yeah. So y'all know, but our listeners may not know, that I am officially a published D&D author now.
Yay!
I have an adventure that I wrote as part of the RPG Writers Workshop last month, which is called The Haunted Circus. It's about a traveling circus that finds themselves haunted by ghosts and other things. And one of the characters, I have a whole crap ton of characters that I wrote like backstories for and all sorts of shit. And one of the characters is a shopkeeper at the circus, and she specializes in like weird kind of creepy toys. Dolls in particular, but she also has like other sorts of toys. And the way that her shop is described is that she has arranged all of her toys to depict like panoramas of like gruesome like attacks and like horrible like traumatizing scenes, like all like the toy soldiers are all like murdering someone or whatever. And all the dolls, she has dolls lining the walls, and all the dolls all seem like they're watching you wherever you go. And this is a feeling that persists. So if you purchase one of the dolls, then you take it with you, then you constantly feel like you have eyes on you.
That's horrifyingly cool.
So your doll, was your ceramic doll was making me think of that particular character and those creepy dolls. And actually, what's awesome about that is, so we were playtesting, just the four of us, our family. I have been playtesting this game, and last week my daughter stole one of the dolls. Her character stole one of the dolls.
I feel like that's even worse in the doll world.
Better or worse, I don't know. Anyway, she stole it, and then she was creeped out by the fact that she constantly felt like she was being watched, and so she was going to drop it off inside the circus tent before the circus started for that night, where there have been attacks and like ghosts and hauntings and zombies and things. And actually that becomes like both her entering the tent to do that, and also she's a rogue, so she's sort of stealthed in, and she had a really good role, and so she was successful in her stealthiness, and so both having the doll in there and her going in there itself has opened the door to having a lot more information about what's going on that they would not have gotten. So it's a good plot point, a plot device, if you will, and yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
creepy dolls. If you do notice that like things are missing or being moved around, I would look at the baby first.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Definitely keep your eye on that baby.
Maybe I should like have it closer to the front door then.
It's like you want, you always want your feet facing towards the door. It's kind of that vibe. Like you don't want your bed to be facing the other way.
You always want your feet facing towards the door?
No, is that just me? you want to be able to see if the door opens or like, no?
Does that, well, maybe, I mean, maybe we're thinking the same thing because I sleep on my side, but I tend to face the door when I'm sleeping on my side.
Well, that's probably like your caveman self, like being prepared for an attack.
My nickname in college,
caveman. I normally sleep on my side, but the side that I sleep on is the ear that I can hear out of.
Oh.
If I sleep on the other side, and like Aaron tries to talk to me, then if this ear is against the pillow and this is the one that's exposed, that's the bad ear. That's the one that. That's the
this
one
also
that had,
makes sense
the ear
because,
infection.
Like,
wait, time out.
To hear an attack,
Chris,
you would need that good ear
that's
up.
That's true.
Lower your camera.
Lower my shirt. Camera. Oh, okay.
It took me a minute. This shirt is so amazing.
So good.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, thank you. I needed that.
I
caught the top of it, and it just took a minute.
For listeners, my t-shirt depicts the Princess Leia with Ziggy Stardust makeup all across her face. And in sort of David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust style font, it says Rebel Rebel. That's,
so
that's
cool.
The accessibility note for people not watching.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm glad you did that. I like that collision on a t-shirt.
I do too. Yes, it's I'm quite fond of the shirt.
I only wish it was a ringer tee.
Yeah. Yeah, I my t-shirt size varies between small and medium depending on like the manufacturer of the t-shirt. And so sometimes I err on the small side and sometimes I err on the medium side because I don't know. And this t-shirt, when I got it, I assumed that I would be small. And in fact, I am medium in this particular t-shirt size. So I love this shirt, but it's also a little small. Which makes me love it like slightly less. Like I would like it if it was a little bit bigger, but I don't want to go back and get another one.
Before we get into the topic, I need a judgment call from you all. I'm about to say something snarky, not to you, but at work.
Okay.
I don't know if you've, it's politically related. So on Friday, the president declared a tax deferral, right? Until the end of the year. And so someone in the staff
channel asked the president. Sorry, I thought you were talking about like your company.
No. What? I don't think we have somebody with the title president.
I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't.
Sorry, I'm new here.
Yeah.
Like as in, yeah, and you don't need to file your taxes this year or something?
No. Withholding, Social Security withholding. In your
oh, great. Yeah, control. Great. Awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Totally not legal. Not the bounds of the Constitution. So someone asked, doesn't the Constitution say Congress has the sole power to tax? And someone said, that's everything I've heard as well. And I want to say, wait. I'm a public school student here. Tell me a little more about this Constitution thing. Is this new? But I also feel like I'm just like poking the, I'm not going to do it. I'm poking the beehive for no reason. Like, fine, have your conversation, whatever.
Yeah, I would vote no. It's tempting, but it doesn't really amount to much.
No, it doesn't. And it starts a conversation that I don't need in my life.
Yeah, see, if you don't want the follow-up, then don't do it.
Yeah, I have to do some work sometime this afternoon, and this could definitely be a...
Yeah, it's easy to say things in text and have the voice... Like, it would, like, if you said that in person, it would land differently than saying it in text. And I was reminded of this concept yesterday because we've been having a whole bunch of people leave at our company. And the most recent one was announced Monday. And this is somebody that I have, you know, is in the Americas, from America, is currently living in Toronto, along with you, Allison. not with you. He's not there. I don't expect him to like pop up out
of the bathroom. Wait, slow down. This is all going way too quickly for me.
We all live in like a big commune.
Yeah, I mean, everybody.
That's actually how I had Toronto in my head for what it's worth. So that doesn't surprise
me. Toronto, I'm sure, is a big city, but like everybody, like I know who lives in Canada basically lives in Toronto. So I just imagine like Toronto is like five people.
It's all just like going over the city. So you
all
can,
the
like,
tech
walk
people.
Anyway,
still in the same building. Yeah.
Anyway, he's leaving, and like he has introduced himself, and we've had joking conversations about how he is an asshole. So I said on his post, because there's been a lot of these types of farewell posts, and it's really depressing, and people are starting to get really affected. Like, hey, you know, like, sorry to see you go. I hope, wish you good luck, whatever, blah, 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 blah. When I first met you, I thought you were an asshole. I still think you're an asshole, but I think you're actually a decent human being, which is probably better. And then yesterday morning, Tom, who, you know, is a very nice person and a very great human being, also the CEO of the company, messages me and says, so I'm not really sure if your post on that farewell post was a joke or not. And that was like, shit.
Record scratch. You're like, damn it.
Yeah.
You might wonder how I got here. Oh, sorry, Chris. That sucks, dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, I told him, like, I appreciate, like, I would rather you call me out on my shit and so I can, like, be more conscious of that stuff than not calling me out of my shit. And he wasn't like upset about it. He was like concerned that people might, he said he assumed it was a joke, but he wasn't 100% sure. And he said he asked the person in question and they weren't 100% sure. And he was concerned that if people did not know that there is this sort of like banter or people new to the company who maybe hadn't even met him yet, which is very possible because we haven't had a retreat in like, you know, more than a year now because we've canceled it, that they might not get the context either. And especially when you're thinking like English is not the first language for a lot of our employees either. So clarification might be needed. So I followed up.
So it turns out I'm
the asshole, yes. That is how it, in fact, turns out. So there you go. The lesson of the story is that language is hard, and that when you're saying something in a group with people, it may land differently when there's facial expressions and there's body language and that sort of thing than it would if it is exclusively in text. And I didn't have any emojis. Maybe emojis would have helped. Probably emojis would have helped. That's another like sub lesson. Like fucking use emojis to convey like body language or facial expression or meaning, because we got nothing else when we're doing just exclusively.
The other thing to take away from this is
just don't call people an asshole. Maybe that might be a good thing to take away
in a public forum.
Oh no, I was going to say I can post, boy, that guy's an asshole. LOL, JK, and fine.
I feel like it's just healthy to steer clear of
calling people assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet right there. Yeah.
So the subtext is you're hiring.
No, actually. I mean, we're hiring for sales positions.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not quite sure how this COVID thing is going to turn out. So we have a hiring freeze except for sales, which we need a whole sales team.
Yeah.
Because that's part of who's leaving, like the entire sales team.
Sales team.
Yeah.
Sales is one of those positions, though, that you expect turnover in.
Is it? I don't know. We've never had a sales team before. Like,
yeah, sales.
We built the sales team from like the ground up, like by pulling people from different roles and like smushing them together and saying, okay, you're sales and marketing, go do things. And they all took that on and they did that thing. And none of them were like hired as salespeople. And we didn't have like a head of sales or anything. Like, I mean, we moved somebody into that position, but it wasn't like somebody with a sales background. And that's part of the reason why we're just like from the ground up, like building a new sales team, because obviously there is a problem in that concept of like just kind of pulling people around, and having an actual sales team is probably going to be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the flip to that, to totally hijack this conversation today, is or the intent of this conversation today, is that like sales is the first representation that your clients have of the company.
Yep.
So if sales is not totally aligned with the culture top to bottom, you may have misaligned client expectations from experience. And I don't mean like in things like sprint length and things like, you know, deliverables, but even just general attitude. Hey, yeah. We call people assholes around here. Like that's, I mean, I say that flippantly, but I mean, that's a thing. Like our communication is very informal, and that's, you know, there's
all my communication is informal. Everyone else's is probably fine.
Oh. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's,
I mean, obviously, we don't call people assholes, and that's why the CEO of the company was telling me that, like, are you joking, or?
Yeah. Well, do you have an HR department?
We have an HR person.
Well, and it was better the CEO was messaging you than the HR person, so.
Probably true, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this show is about.
Work.
Something.
It's not about
work. Ooh, work.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of fine with work. I took yesterday off, so maybe that's part of it.
You're like, I'm fancy free. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, so I've got like an hour of it in today and none yesterday.
Well, the topic for this week is really random. You probably won't ever use it again in your day-to-day. But here we go. It's Gabelle.
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 Gabelle. I feel like this is an instrument for measuring something. Like a tool for measuring something.
Oh, like the actual tool, not like, oh, that's 5 Gabelles.
No, I think like, pass me the Gabelle. I need to see how something that building is.
The Gabelle.
Yeah. Or do you have the Gabelle in your trunk or is it in mine? I'm not even sure how big it is. That's a problem. Like, I'm not sure if it's a handheld device or if you have to use like jack stands to hold it up. I suspect it has something to do with percentage of elevation change. Incline. That's the word I'm looking for.
The first thing that came to my mind when you said Gabelle was, wait a second, isn't there like a singer named that? And of course I was thinking of Patti LaBelle.
I think you were saying, of course I was thinking of Adele.
Which is different.
Which would have been much better.
Than Patti Gabelle.
Yeah.
That would be a different person.
Maybe it's
Clark Gabelle.
Yeah, Clark Gabelle.
Maybe it's a tribute band.
Or as Gary suggested, just Gabelle.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit further. That's one step further away from Adele because you're changing two things as opposed to just one thing.
Yeah, that's the problem with that.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, I know you're wrong, Gary, about it being some sort of tool of measurement. Your argument is convincing. Hand me the Gabelle.
Hey,
definitely does.
I'll take that.
Sound. Hand me the Gabelle. Definitely does sound like something somebody would say. But maybe they're not talking about a tool. Maybe they're talking about some weird Canadian dish that nobody outside of Canada even knows exists. And that's why we would never use it in our daily life, because it's not like poutine where it's like delicious and multicultural and something that other people can get behind on. It's like roasted pig feet or something, like something really horrible that nobody wants, like haggis. Like, I mean, I guess we know what haggis is because we know that it's horrible, but like maybe there's some obscure version of, I'm sure there's an obscure version of something haggis-like that nobody talks about except for the people within that culture, and they just don't, they it's such a horrible thing that it's like out of sight, out of mind. They just never even mention it.
Are you familiar with Brunschweiger?
Brunschweiger?
Yeah, Brunschweiger.
Brunschweiger.
It's like a spreadable meat?
No. Usually that sounds like pate.
Yeah, this is like, I don't know, like growing up, like this was like the sandwich I'm sorry, I would take the to phrase, elementary school.
I'm stuck on spreadable meat. That sounds
Oh yeah, I should horrifying. Finish explaining this because it is horrifying. And I think about it now, I'm like, what? When I was a kid, I used to take Brunschweiger and cheese sandwiches to school. And it was like this tube of meat that somewhat resembled bologna. And you take it with a knife and spread it like butter and then throw a piece of American cheese, which is clearly not cheese on white bread. And that was like one of my favorite sandwiches when I was in elementary school. And I'm good horrified.
You. I'm glad it was one of your favorite sandwiches instead of it was something you hated.
No. Yeah, I know. I would ask for it. Like how did.
Like that seems like right up a kid's alley. Like, I don't know, some weird sort of spreadable.
I had my dad made me salami sandwiches for lunch for years. Mm. And eventually it got to the point where I had to say, I don't want any more salami sandwiches. I can't take any more salami sandwiches. I can't. Sure. I just can't. It's too many. And this is me, like, I don't know, 10, 12 or something, like, dad, no more salami, please.
You gotta mix it up.
Yeah, I definitely remember having that conversation about bologna, and then salami came in. And then, for a change of pace, I had peanut butter and honey in the mix. Really good. Still a big fan of peanut butter and honey. Not so much bologna or Brunschweiger or salami these days.
Yeah, I still maintain that peanut butter and jelly or peanut butter and honey is one of the greatest food combinations ever. Like, that is just a perfect thing.
Yeah, and there's something about obviously like local honey that it's different everywhere, and I like, I know it's not true, but I like to think that, like, as you're eating this honey, you can sort of like taste the landscape because of the where the pollinators have visited, right? And so that there is like the flavor is so influenced by like what you're smelling while you're eating it outside.
I mean, I'm sure that if you have a particularly discerning palate, that's not inaccurate.
I ate Brunschweiger, so I think we've established that I do not have that discerning palate.
I was going to say, I mean, much like people who have, much like people who taste coffee and can tell like the difference between, you know, different varietals of coffee that have even come from the same region, I think that most people do not have refined palates to that extent.
But don't you think that's like something that I think to some extent you can be trained.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's about,
I mean, there are some people that are tone deaf and cannot be musicians. But is that true? Like, they're tone deaf. Like, what if you took time and really, I mean, just beat on music fundamentals? Like, would that not, they would never be Pavarotti, but I mean, they could certainly pick out, hey, I'm not saying,
I mean,
the right
I think
note.
That I think that there's probably some biological things that might get in the way of that to a degree, but I generally think that anybody can be anything if they practice.
When I was in high school,
this message brought to you by Binary Jazz, you too can be anything if you practice.
Super inspirational. Doesn't matter the shape of your ear or what's going on inside, you can figure out what notes things are.
Mozart was deaf. Well, that's all I gotta say.
Right, the Mozart so was Mozart lost his hearing, right?
So probably because he was banging on the piano so hard. I mean, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Mozart was,
that's
like,
funny.
Mozart,
like, that's like
was
Mozart's
the Renaissance equivalent of a death metal band.
Yeah, Mozart's parents were like, keep playing on that piano, you're going to lose your hearing, right?
Right.
But I mean, that's like music. Like, it, like somebody else's parents were like, keep making that face, your face is going to freeze that way. And we don't know who that person is. Unless it's like an impressionist artist and their face really did look that way. And we're like,
I'm going to say that person is probably Steve Martin. But I mean, there's probably a lot of people that maybe Jim Carrey.
Oh man, imagine if Jim Carrey's face like froze in any of the faces.
any of them, painful.
I was in high school band and there was this trumpet player who was not, who was just having issues, like couldn't hear, like was reading the music and couldn't figure out where things were going, blah, blah, blah. And the brass instructor came up behind him and like put his forehead against the back of the kid's neck and like sang these notes. And suddenly it just clicked. It was like that physical, like feeling the frequency, like made it work. It was, I'm still stunned to this day, you know, what year did I graduate? I think more than 20 years ago.
You're like, a young sing, 82, so.
Like sing the notes in the song?
He sang the notes that he should be playing on the trumpet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, I'm going to say it was like a fourth, right? And he just sang that, and like suddenly this kid just had it locked in and knew like what to do with the rest of his body to make these frequencies come out, whereas previously he was struggling trying to play this part, and it was obvious because I mean it really, yeah, it was neat. That brass instructor was fantastic. He did a lot with like the actual creation of music, and you know, I remember one time when he was like so you're all musicians, right? A painter. What does a painter work on? You know, like they start with nothing. They start with white, you know, like, what do we start with? And as musician, young musicians, you know, high school kids were like, we're all sitting there and he's like that. Exactly. Silence. Like that's where everything starts from. So silence is part of your tool set. You don't have to always play, you know, as loud as you can. And you don't have to fill every second, you know, there's silence. And it was like, you talk about the effectiveness of silence in music. I mean, it was much more than like, hear the notes on the page and play. It was like a lot about like the parts of music that are not, you know, rote, and, you know, the creative parts and the magic of the music that makes it universal. Anyway, Jason, I don't know his last name.
Seagull. Huh. Seagal.
Jason Seagal went on to become a famous martial artist, which makes sense.
Jason Seagal.
What was the word? Gabel.
Gabel. Seagal. Seagull.
I felt like I should
hand wave at the just it's over there.
On that same note, I guess. On that Gabel. So Allison introduced it as saying it is something that we will likely never use again.
Correct.
No. Yeah.
Which I have a lot of tools I've used one time, probably a lot of mine went to tools. Or I've used a second time for totally improper purpose.
A gabel is a tool that is used for ensuring that the corner of a room is a 90-degree angle. It's a little wedge that is exactly 90 degrees, and you put it in the corner of your room to make sure that it's 90 degrees. And now, of course, if you have a house like we do that is 100 years old, this tool does you no good whatsoever, because you'll go to a corner in the room and you'll put it there and be like, nope, not 90 degrees. And that's all you can do. That's it. We're done.
First.
That's all there is to do.
That tool is called a speed square. Secondly.
A speed square.
It is.
Because it's on speed or because it's fast?
It's fast. It has a whole – there's like a book that comes with it on how to use it. But there are like – there's a flat plate that kind of edges over. It's 90 degrees. There's spots where you can do like a quick stroke if you're building. I mean, it's a very utilitarian tool. Secondly, I own one, and it's a Swanson brand speed square, which never ceases to crack me up because I just think of like Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. Like, would know how to use this thing, whereas I'm like, I need to do this thing, and where the hell's the book? So, anyway. What the
we're
hell
actually
is a
at
gabel?
The time. Yeah, we're actually at the time where you can tell us what a gabel is.
It is, you're going to probably hate me for this. It's a very unpopular tax on salt in France.
And okay.
And it has, it was established in like probably.
Like a bell tax, obviously.
Like a bell tax, yes.
Right.
Established during like the 1500s and has been off and on again, was finally eradicated during the French Revolution and then reinstated by Napoleon and then gotten rid of, but they finally got rid of it in 1945.
What?
And, okay.
And it's a big, it's a big, it's a,
and it was at a consumer tax or a commercial? I'm really interested now.
It was originally an indirect tax that affected like farming communities, but then it was basically like all over. So all French citizens. So basically anything for preserving food, making cheese, livestock, like anything you need salt for,
Was that
like,
now?
It basically made like huge disparities in salt prices across the country.
Wow. I'm wondering, you know, if you go to a restaurant and there's like nowadays, I don't know, probably consumer protection laws, but nowadays, like there's the items you purchased, and then if there's like an extra fee for whatever, it's a line item. Like, I wonder if there was like a Gabelle line item, or if it was just lumped into tax in general, or it was just like, hey, it's quantity of francs. I don't know. That's something.
Generally, these topics are things that come out of, that derive from your non-binary jazz life. They sort of bubble up in your day-to-day, and then it's sort of as a recurring theme, and then you're like, oh, I think I'll bring this to the show. I'm very interested how Gabelle came up in your circle of influence, that it was notable as a top subject for a topic.
It was in a book I was reading, okay. And it came up a few times, and they referenced it as like, well, this is as outlandish as Gabelle, and I was like, I don't know what that means, like, how outlandish is it? Are you being sarcastic? I'm pretty sure it's the Sherlock Holmes book I'm reading. It's not an actual Sherlock Holmes. It's somebody else writing Sherlock Holmes. But
okay, I mean that's fair. That works. Certainly, sounds like one of those things that the author just threw in there because they were trying to be like.
Sounds like they just knew it and then
trying to be obscure. Like, hey, I'm gonna throw this in there and nobody's gonna know what I'm talking about. And I'm so smart.
Yeah.
I'm so much smarter than my readers. Cool,
I think that's
cool,
a great example,
cool.
though, of like how knowledge is like the potential power of the internet, because like knowledge can't be constrained. Right? Like, sure, maybe the writer threw that in is like a show off, like how smart I am with this obscure thing. But here we are, three random people, you know, in one hemisphere of the globe, like discussing it. And that's like a wave that's made now. And so. Maybe that's
but I her. Also, I did ask my sister-in-law who's from France, and I was just like, hey, like, is this a thing that, like, people know about, obviously? And she was just like, oh, yeah, like, that's something we study. Like, it's definitely something that people know what it is.
So if you are not American and likely French, then you might know what this is. But because we are not, then we have no clue. We actually do have a listener question. Danette returns to our inboxes.
Oh, welcome back.
Hi, Danette.
Awesome.
Danette says, if you had to choose one pattern to commit to for life in addition to solid colors, would you go with stripes, polka dots, or florals? This question is brought to you by me listening to Tan France's book, him mentioning how he moved to Utah, him taking a strong position on how floral prints should become as evergreen as stripes or polka dots, and then me thinking, I think Chris just moved out of Utah. So to correct that last bit,
Chris and Gary confusion.
Yeah. Chris is still in Utah. Gary moved out of Florida to New Collins. What am I saying?
New Carolina.
New Carolina. Yeah. New Carolina is where Gary's moved. Chris is still in Utah. But has been talking about moving to, British Columbia in some future scenario at some point. now that we've gotten that squared away, because I feel like that's very important. Stripes, polka dots, or florals? Open to the floor.
I would go with florals. I feel like there's a lot of flexibility with that, you know? Seasonally, it can change up. And I used to get picked on for wearing a Hawaiian shirt quite a bit from, like, all of my 20s.
I knew you were that person. I had a hunch.
I was not. That does not come as a surprise. My first roommate in college was also a Hawaiian shirt-wearing person, so.
Well, before my last team trip, I went out and bought, like, a bunch of Hawaiian shirts so I could dress formally in the afternoon. After dinner, I would go back to my room and take the shorts and t-shirt off and shower and put on jeans and sandals and a Hawaiian shirt. The Hawaiian shirts I bought from a thrift store, brought back home, dropped back off at the same thrift store. So I effectively rented them for a week.
I think I would choose stripes. I don't think that's a huge shocker. Yeah, I feel like I always like stripes.
I think I would probably also go with stripes because polka dots are too much, and I don't think I could pull off florals.
See, so, I was thinking polka dots, there's a lot of, like, you could go tiny, like, huge. I mean, I don't know, like, how huge, like, a single pot on your shirt if it would count as polka dots.
Just one.
Like, so it's just like, yeah, it's like half the symbol.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, all over the place, which should be, you know,
I was also interested that this is the direction that the question went, as opposed to like including things like plaid. Plaid, when I read the beginning of the pattern to commit to for life, I thought, oh, surely plaid is going to be one of the options, but plaid was not. Also, plaid is not something I could commit to for life either.
What is plaid but stripes?
Sure.
It's just different widths of stripes.
And overlapping, yes.
Yeah. So it kind of counts.
Kind of, I suppose. If I mean, that would also obviously offer some variety if we were in the stripes clan.
I'm going to have to buy some Hawaiian shirts.
Not some plaid shirts.
Tell Rondo we're sorry.
You need some flannel. You need some flannel in New Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually, I mean, like, I'm outside now. Not that this is an exception, but I'm outside now, and it's. I'm actually wearing pants. I mean, no, wait, let me phrase that differently. I'm wearing long pants.
We knew. Most of us knew what you meant, Gary.
Yeah.
It's like right on the edge of coolness. You know, which to me, being from Florida, means like it's like 75.
I would. That would be amazing if it was on the edge of coolness. It is not here. It has been like over 100 pretty much every day of the week. We're in the oh God, I don't want to go outside part of summer right now.
Oh, here's an interesting thing. In Florida, when it rained, right, it was just hot, humid rain. Here, when it rains, like, the temperature drops.
Oh, yeah.
Which
that's what happens in other places that aren't Florida.
That's a normal.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.